I am the Solid Monster, and welcome. This is episode 35 of RSPW Rewind. It's been a while, but we are back. This is where we look back at all the dumb stuff and the not-so-dumb stuff that the wrestling community was talking about years ago. And I show that wrestling fans complaining about stuff is not something that is unique only to the social media age. Oh no, it's been going on since the beginning of time. You thought we were done, but we're not done. I got a whole new batch of posts to get through, so let's get right into it. I've been waiting for this for a long time. And we begin with a post by Ahmed Johnson's Beer Belly. It's a great way to start. On August 13th, 2002, titled, Could Anything Save the Triple H Shawn Michaels Match for You? So we were days away from Shawn Michaels' big SummerSlam comeback against Triple H, one of the greatest matches in SummerSlam history, this great comeback story. Right, we could look back on it now and realize what a classic it was. But it doesn't sound like many people on RSPW expected it to be, if this post is any indication. I think the consensus, and I should point out that consensus is spelled S-I-S at the end here, the consensus is on RSPW that it will not be good. HBK already announced he won't wrestle, and Triple H is, well, Triple H. Plus, they are really both heels, and the de facto face HBK has little sympathy or crowd support now. What can save this match or feud, if anything? It's amazing to look back and think about the fact that this would have to be saved. But this is apparently how some people were viewing it back then. So he pitches a few different options for how this could potentially be made better, how this could be saved. A Scott Hall run-in is one thing that he recommends. Shawn Michaels actually wrestling. I don't know what he's referring to. I guess maybe Shawn Michaels had made a comment about how this is not going to be a wrestling match. It's going to be a fight. And so people thought he wasn't actually going to wrestle. I don't know. He says maybe it doesn't last more than 10 painful minutes. Or Triple H pulls a quad again. Or will you just be satisfied if it comes off even worse than, say, Test against The Undertaker and Delave... The spelling is really bad on this. I assume he means devalues. I don't know what Delevates means. He's creating words now. Devalues Triple H's momentum towards any thoughts of being the guy to squash Brock Lesnar. So there were also concerns, and I saw this as well, that people had at that time that Triple H might in fact be the first person to kill the push of Brock Lesnar. The best thing that happened to Brock Lesnar was getting him off of Raw right after this SummerSlam show and putting him on SmackDown and getting him away from Triple H. It was the best thing that happened to his career. It's the same reason why Edge went to SmackDown in, what was it, 2006 or 2007? I think it was 2007, to get away from Triple H. You don't think he didn't view it that way? The best thing that could have happened to him. Anyway, I am Calzone Double X replies. I remember reading that Shawn's match in his TWA show against some guy he was training, I forget who, was pretty decent. And that is incorrect, by the way. The person, it wasn't a trainee, it was actually a very experienced veteran. The person that Shawn wrestled was his old tag team partner, Paul Diamond. In that one TWA match, Paul Diamond was going by the name Venom at that time. I covered that in the history segment. Anyway, he took one moderate ladder bump, but the psychology was spot on, and even though he was reduced to mainly brawling, he carried the kid to what a lot of self-important smarks called a three-star match. I have some level of faith in HBK's ego not letting him look bad in a match, even though the conclusion is very obvious. I don't expect a match of the year candidate, but I do expect a good brawl with good psychology and a decent in-ring story. The major roadblock, as you mentioned, is the fact that HBK has not been built up as a babyface. Triple H is doing his darndest to get boos, but unless HBK does some serious babyfacing, I don't see the crowd getting behind him much. Well, Mr. Calzone must have been very surprised when he saw the crowd reaction to Shawn Michaels at the Nassau Coliseum that night. And then things turned dark with Z Heroin's response to what can be done to save the match. A La Parca drive-by, gunning both HBK and Triple H down in cold blood. Thankfully, that did not happen. We move on to the Bogus Prophet on April 18, 1999, with a post titled, "What Is It With the Spitting?" I didn't know where this was going when I initially clicked on this thread. This could have gone so many different ways, but I was intrigued. My curiosity was piqued, and so here is his post. Is it my imagination or are wrestlers, especially in the WWF, spitting a whole lot more? Again, the spelling is horrendous on some of these posts. Spitting a whole lot more these days. I mean, The Rock seems to be spitting every 2 minutes. Triple H just spit on the ramp. Back to the locker room on the replay of the X-Pac and Kane against Test and Triple H match. I don't have a problem with spitting. Hell, I used to mark out when Mick Foley as Cactus Jack used to spit up into the air and then catch it in his mouth on the way down. But when someone spits on the ring canvas, I just gotta wonder about unsafe working conditions as well as just being pretty disgusting. Oh, God. You know, the Headbangers used to do that. I think it was Mosh. He used to do that thing where he would spit up into the air and catch it in his mouth. You know, so did Bully Ray when he was in Impact. Just fucking gross. I never liked that. Insdictor. D-Y-K-T-O-R. Insdictor says, I can't speak on WWF, but I noticed that Goldberg really makes a production out of that spitting thing he does in the ring. It's pretty revolting, and I honestly don't get the point of it. Is it perhaps something he does to make himself look tougher or more manly? Twist chimes in, says, what has always puzzled me about Goldberg is the disturbing way he sticks out his tongue like some sort of gecko lizard. It was especially bad on Spring Stampede. I thought he was trying to catch flies. But then, as the animal lover he is, he would only let them go. HBK and Austin is this user's name. I also noticed that Goldberg does that, and so do a lot of wrestlers. I know in amateur wrestling that when you spit, you lose weight just like when you go number two. Now I need an amateur wrestler to confirm this for me. Like, I can believe that taking a shit, you would drop a pound or two, especially like the day after Thanksgiving, you're probably dropping 3 or 4 pounds. Like, I get that. But the idea that wrestlers spit to lose weight, I don't know about that. That's the first time I'm hearing of that. And finally, Watermelon writes, nothing, I repeat, nothing is grosser than Chris Benoit clearing his nostrils out on his opponents. I don't know why he does it. If he did it to me, I would bend down and slap him. I suspect that if you bent down and slapped Benoit back then, that he would give you quite the receipt. Well, let's move on. Let's go to March 6th, 1998. In a post by Maddie C titled, Thunder is no longer my favorite wrestling show. I'm more amazed that Thunder was anyone's favorite wrestling show at any point in time. Did anybody watching this right now or listening to this, did anybody ever consider WCW Thunder to be their favorite show? When you still had Nitro pretty much, you know, in its prime at that point. Apparently, Maddie C is the one. Says, boy, what a disappointment. That was the most pointless, boring waste of 2 hours. I knew it would stink when the first 10 minutes was nothing but NWO blather and a Goldberg squash. With all their talent, that's the best WCW can give its fans. I know Goldberg is over. I know the fans love him. So why not let him wrestle? Why just squashes? Oh, because he can't wrestle. Sorry. I forgot. If we have to watch him, can they please try to teach him a few wrestling moves so that the farce of his employment... I'm starting to think Bret Hart may have written this post as Matty C. The farce of his employment is made a little more palatable. Oh yeah, they fired the wrestler with some actual talent who tried to... who tried to wring a wrestling match out of his big, roided-out ass. Sorry, I forgot. You can't reward someone who tries to put on a wrestling match during a wrestling show. Obviously, he's referring to William Regal, Steven Regal back then, who was let go by WCW after his infamous Nitro match with Goldberg, which isn't exactly true. It's not entirely. And I talked about that, too, on a history segment a few months ago as far as why he was let go at that point. But, you know, if you watch that match between Regal and Goldberg on Nitro... it's not the disaster that people make it out to be. I thought it was actually a pretty good match. It came off as... it was the most competitive match Goldberg had been in up to that point in his WCW career. And he fought through it and he won. I thought it was actually a pretty good little match. But anyway, he continues, I have many times asserted that I enjoy interview segments. Well, I have to qualify that. I don't enjoy NWO interview segments. They bore me to tears. I think even after repeated viewings that the Macho Steamboat match from WrestleMania 3 is one for the ages, a classic. Their feud was masterfully built and climaxed with a four-star match. Having said that, I could give less than a rat's behind about his feuds with Hulkster and the rest of the no-jobbers. I don't want to listen to him anymore. I just don't care, Eric. I don't want to see the Nitro girls hyping next week's show. Period. Well, come on. I enjoyed the Nitro Girls. Who among us did not enjoy the Nitro Girls? I have to draw the line there. Hennig and Neidhart, geez, and it's sad to see how unpopular Davey Boy is with the WCW audiences. Thanks a million, Vince. Because of family loyalty, his career will end in bottom Carter hell. Don't want to see Goldberg squashes. I don't want to watch Jericho make an ass out of another wrestler by messing up his spot. I don't want to see the NWO do yet another run-in. The only redeeming factors in the whole show were the Raven DDP Benoit bits and the Malenko run-in. WWF does so much with so damn little. If WCW can't see how to fill 5 primetime hours a week with good shows when they have 90% of the talent in the business, then they should stop trying and cancel Thunder. Focus and give us a great Nitro every week instead. Boy, you know... I listen to him say that. 90% of the talent in the business. Why can't they put on a good show? Sounds awfully familiar to me. I can't quite put my finger on what this reminds me of. But Matty C laying down the smackdown on WCW at a time when WCW was still on top. They were still hot. Goldberg was just getting really hot. But apparently he wasn't impressed by all the Goldberg squashes. Nature Boy responds, what are you people watching? Are you blind? Thunder was great. I mean, what the hell do you want? There is just no pleasing some people. The only slack match was interrupted by the Giant. All the rest were enjoyable. Great Benoit DDP Raven brawl, great Eddie match, great Hoovy match, great Jericho match, and great heat in the Hogan Savage exchanges with those low blow type shoot comments. I liked it so much that I watched it again right after it was over. And in his signature at the bottom, he says, sure, you are entitled to your opinion, but too bad mine is the right one. I'm going to have to start signing my work emails with that in my signature. Jonathan Snowden chimes in. I agree that the matches were solid. The problem is that the matches you listed were basically the only ones that aired. Instead of more good wrestling, we saw endless NWO interviews and were subjected to Bryan Adams on multiple occasions. I know you need the NWO stuff for the marks, but do you really need that much interview time? And with all the talented wrestlers on the roster, why are they pushing Bryan Adams, who can't wrestle his way out of a paper bag? Aren't there enough stiffs in the NWO who can't work? I wouldn't mind if the main events suck, but I do mind that they suck and they constantly push them at the expense of the decent matches. Hell, if a member of the NWO isn't in the ring, the announcers may never even mention the match. That's crap, and I don't like it. As good as the best of WCW is, it is constantly overshadowed by the bad and ill-conceived garbage they force down our throats. And T. Brutus 1 says, one thing that can solve your problem immediately is called a remote control. You don't like, you don't watch. There's too much wrestling on TV these days, and there are far too many pay-per-views on today. We don't need any more of them. Here's a post from Aaron Woolfuck, or Woolfolk, way back on April 10th, 1995, titled, Why Did WCW Let Hulk Hogan Screw Them? And it's a lengthy post, but this is from the pre-NWO Hogan period in WCW. And I think it would be interesting just to see what Mr. Woolfuck has to say. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, by the way. That's kind of how it reads to me. We'll call him Aaron. How about that? Here's what Aaron has to say. I've read several posts over the last few months that have alluded to Hulk Hogan's contract with WCW. Apparently, there is a clause that allows Hogan to book his own matches and the storylines that surround them. This provision thus gives Hogan the power to determine when he will job and to who. Does anyone else out there think that it's completely asinine for a wrestling federation to relinquish its ultimate power to book the outcome of matches and give it to a single competitor? And on top of that, they gave it to a person whose ego is legendary. Already, this stupid contract provision has let some marvelous opportunities go by. Flair vs. Hogan Part 2 could have been really good because so much was unfinished from their WWF feud. They could have had both men trade the WCW belt back and forth, giving us a really interesting feud. Instead, Flair was forced to fall to the LDOD... Oh, Leg Drop of Doom. Okay. I'm trying to figure out what the hell he's talking about. The Leg Drop of Doom in three straight pay-per-views, or in three pay-per-views, and several house shows in North America and Europe. Boring, not to mention shameful. Then you had Hogan against Vader. This could have been the best feud since the days when Piper was a heel. Things would have been really interesting if Hogan was made to drop the belt to Vader, who bolstered his devastating monster heel image in part by beating such favorites as Sting for the WCW belt. It would have made total sense for Hogan to job to four-time WCW champion Vader, and it would have set up a much-anticipated pay-per-view battle in the future. Instead, Vader comes up short in two pay-per-views and several house shows against Hogan, thus diminishing his image as a threat in WCW. Does WCW and Hogan not realize that he has been extremely boring for many years now? Because... he always prevails in the end, even when he gets seriously injured in an attack by an opponent. I just yawn and shake my head because I know that in the end, Hogan will win the war. All of these missed opportunities with probably many more to come, and why? Because WCW doesn't have the legal power to tell Hogan to lie down for the three count? I think it is very dangerous to let the talent have such power. Ultimately, the only entity that can pursue the best interest of an organization is the organization itself. The NBA loves having Michael Jordan, but it would never give him the power to make the rules or determine the Bulls' playing schedule. Well, if I had Michael Jordan playing in my league, I might just give him that power, but it's Michael Jordan we're talking about. Anyway. He says they wouldn't give Michael Jordan that kind of power because that would only ensure that the Bulls would win the NBA championship every year until Michael Jordan quits for good. Love that fucking analogy, by the way. Michael Jordan is just, he's going to book the outcome of every NBA game and just give him the championship every year, just give himself the title. Hogan has shown that as far as he's concerned, Hogan comes first and WCW comes second. And that's the way it will be until he leaves. Why? Because he has the power to make it that way. This is a valid question for all Even those who think that RSPW is nothing more than a pro-WWF anti-WCW news group. Even if all of you diehard WCW fans have to admit that it was stupid for the company to give Hogan the legal power to determine when and if he'll lose, what was WCW thinking? Did they truly think they needed Hogan that much? Did Ted Turner issue a directive telling WCW to get Hogan at any cost, and then, not knowing that much about running a wrestling federation, agree to give Hogan that power? I would have thought that Hogan needed WCW more than WCW needed him. So Aaron, not very happy at all about Hulk Hogan getting the creative control over his character that he had. And this is a question I get from time to time about Hogan. We've heard about Hogan's ego, and we know about Hogan's contracts because there were legal documents that you can probably search for online that had come out in some kind of lawsuit, I think. And you could see all of the provisions in Hogan's contract and the cut of the pay-per-view and the cut of the merch. And my argument is this: good for Hogan. I would never give him a deal like that. I think it's fucking insane. But WCW made a calculated risk that it was worth it at the time to bring Hogan in and give him what he wanted. But if you're Hulk Hogan and you can get that kind of deal, then why wouldn't you get that kind of... If I knew I could get that kind of deal, shit, I'd ask for the same thing. So I don't even blame Hogan for it. It's just Hogan being Hogan. You want to blame anybody, you blame WCW. But this is what Chris Carlson had to say. He explained it like this. He realized Hogan's name still sold... He's talking about Bischoff now. He realized that Hogan's name still sold for casual fans, and more importantly, for station owners who don't realize that Hogan is not over with the true, dedicated core wrestling audience. That's got to be one of the biggest problems with the non-fans. They make fun of wrestling because of people like Hogan, your quote-unquote casual fan will think that us wrestling fans are fans of Hogan. No wonder they think that wrestling is pathetic, because Hogan is pathetic and Hogan is wrestling. Damn it. That is the conundrum now, isn't it? This one is from August 28th, 1999. A post by Bill Elder titled, "Can RSPW Ever Be Satisfied?" No. I shouldn't even read the post. I just gave you the answer. No. It says, when the WWF title changes hands every other month, day, week, same difference, you complain about how it devalues the belt, about how it makes for uninteresting wrestling, how it's just Vince McMahon looking for ratings and doing his sports entertainment spiel. Then at the same time, you come out on here and call Taz a no-jobbing midget. Don't you realize that because ECW is an extreme fed, that he can't job without losing the title? It may just be me, but isn't that a little hypocritical? By the way, anyone who says they don't like Taz, and that is the reason that you don't want him to be the champion, wouldn't that just make you a mark? Maybe you should all think a little bit about that. Ziha Pafa responds, I think in order for a person to be, quote, smart, or a smart wrestling fan, they have to be like an old fart in a rocking chair, criticizing and complaining about everything they see. At least that's how most smart fans seem to be. I suppose it comes from their hero worship of Dave Meltzer, who seems to be that way quite often. If I didn't already tell you that this post here was from 1999, you would have thought that was a tweet from last week. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Let's stick with old Uncle Dave and go back in time to April 19th, 1995, a post by Michael Zobel titled, Meltzer equals Grinch? A little question mark at the end. My only understanding of Dave Meltzer comes from subscribing to his newsletter. I've never met the man. I think everyone would agree that overall he does an excellent job with The Observer. What makes me laugh is that when I read posts here that make him sound emotionless and jaded about the wrestling business. For instance, some complain that he never pops for even the best done angles and best worked matches. Or ECW freaks not trying to be derogatory. Oh, really? I love that. That's like when you say to somebody, look, like you insult them and then you go, well, no offense. What do you mean no offense? Of course you're meaning offense. If I look at you in the face and I call you a fuckhead, oh, no offense. That's what this is. He calls these ECW fans freaks, but of course he's not meaning that in a derogatory term. Anyway, he says, or ECW freaks say he underestimates ECW and what it has done to change the business or of professional wrestling. I am wondering how much of this is truth and how much of it is just fans wanting Meltzer to like their likes instead of being an impartial reporter. It seems also that some jealousy may enter into it. After all, he has a job that most people would love to have, making wrestling his career and gaining the knowledge and contacts in the business. Am I making too much of this? I'm sure some people can fill me in. Larry says, I agree. People get on him when he doesn't like what they like. I think he strives to be impartial, but has his personal favorites. Terry Funk, for example. I feel like he's written plenty about ECW and given the promotion credit when it definitely is due. Dave Scherer writes, for the most part, I agree. However, go back to last year's Smoky Mountain Fan Week convention. It got a front page mention in the before issue and second page mention in the after issue. Look at the coverage ECW's Net convention got. It was mentioned in passing and we were called the out-of-towners. Jim Cornette is his good friend while Paul Heyman is not. Food for thought. And Andy Patrizio says, I've aired my beefs with Meltzer, but will repeat them in brief. He is very sloppy in his writing. He'll never get a job using that as a writing sample. He also misses things. For example, he said that at the November 20th, 1994 All Japan Women's Dome show that Mita and Shimoda came into lasers. They did not. They were carried out by two men per woman. No jokes, guys. Which he did not mention. What was he watching? He also has a habit of saying things that either make no sense or need explaining. How were Salt and Peppa tremendous in doing their rap at WrestleMania? See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that Meltzer thought the Salt and Peppa rap at WrestleMania with Lawrence Taylor was apparently tremendous. I wonder how many stars he gave it. Personally, I think he's overworked. If he would just spend some money and get a part-time helper to offload some of the work, the Observer would be noticeably improved. Let's do two more. Here's one from October 2nd of 2000, titled My WWF Announcer's Rant by Hulka R. Maniac. Sounds like an impartial party here. Let's see what Hulka, if that is his real name, has to say. JR and Jerry Lawler are probably the two most annoying people on earth. They are even worse than Schiavone and Madden. Lawler screams like a 12-year-old when China or any other woman comes out, and Jim Ross feels like he has to explain the most basic things to the idiot WWF fans. Plus, Ross is a terrible announcer that always messes up. Sure, he was great 10 years ago, but he is worse than Schiavone is today. Plus, it is annoying as fuck when they laugh like monkeys at the stupidest comments. Ha 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 ha, The Rock said monkey piss. Did you hear it, JR? He said piss. I would rather have Kevin Kelly and Michael Cole announcing Raw. And the few responses here were very articulate and very classy, as you would expect here from RSPW. For instance, DX replied with three words. Shut up, bitch. Sick Boy said, no one gives a fuck what you think. And Vinny said, Kelly and Cole together is a bad idea. Coach and Tom Pritchard is the best pairing. And we'll end with this from December 10th, 2000, from our old friend, the Big Crapper. Now, it's been a while since I've done one of these RSPW videos, so I'll forgive you if you don't recall that in one of the previous installments, the Big Crapper is the one who made that infamous post from actually earlier that year in 2000, arguing that WWF, and this is in the year 2000, should scrap all of its pay-per-views. So not arguing, oh, well, there's too many, it should get rid of a few. His argument was, his business plan apparently was just get rid of all of the pay-per-views. That is what he would have done, because it was, and I quote, ruining the way their business runs. Yes. The pay-per-views, which were the lifeblood of their business back then, was ruining WWE's business plan. Anyway, he's back with a post titled, Why Wasn't RSPW Complaining? Why wasn't RSPW complaining when Angle can't even beat Jericho cleanly? Why? Because RSPW has a bunch of Jerichoholics in it, that's why. It's the standard for a champ to beat an upper mid-carder before the pay-per-view. Booker T beat U.S. champion Lance Storm before a pay-per-view. Scott Steiner beat U.S. champion Rection. He might be referring to General Erection. Those fucking Russo ideas. And Triple H has beaten just about everyone cleanly other than The Rock before a pay-per-view. Yet both times he faces Jericho, not only does Angle not win cleanly, but Jericho has the match won cleanly before a referee bump or interference. This makes Angle look weak and is inexcusable considering he's higher up on the card. Is Triple H trying to sabotage Kurt Angle's reign? What is going on here? Danger 3210 and the lovely Lita. That's his name. This is what he says. Angle is a heel who cheats to win. Duh. It's standard for him to win by DQs and shit like that. Jericho was doing the same thing when he was a heel. Why are you complaining about Jericho's push? The guy has had main event heat for months now, yet he has never ever main evented a pay-per-view before and is stuck working with these useless, boring feuds with useless, boring workers like X-Pac and Kane. Kurt Angle is doing much better than Jericho is right now, so who really cares who wins cleanly or not? What the hell are you complaining about? Me says, that's the biggest problem with smart fans. They're all marks. You know, I read these posts, and they make me want to bang my head against the wall. The same way Twitter does today, when I look at some of these Twitter flame wars and Twitter threads that I see. But the next time you wish that you could go back to your days as a young wrestling fan, right? We all romanticize about that. Oh, man, I wish I could go back to the, you know, the mid to late 80s or early 90s. I wish I could go back to that time when you didn't have all these people with all these forums where they could argue and complain and debate with one another. Every time you think that way, that if I just went back 30 years, this wouldn't exist. I want you to realize that there were plenty of people complaining about those things back then, too. And it was happening right here in RSPW. Hit that thumbs up. Consider becoming a channel member as well, if you are not already. And leave a comment below. What other topics would you want me to search for? I mean, I have a listing with a whole bunch of other posts that I've collected. So we have enough material for a few more of these, but we're going to run out. There is a finite number. Maybe there's something that you want me to search for that was being talked about at the time. Maybe there was a big event or a big incident in wrestling or something that I haven't covered already. You want to know what people were saying about it at that time. So again, leave your comments and your suggestions down below. And we'll see if we might be able to find it. But I will see you guys soon for another Back in Time edition of RSPW Rewind.